You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, ladies and gentlemen, and man, oh man, do we have a lot to talk about as we welcome you to the UFC Vegas 10 / Bellator 246 post-fight show live right here on the MMA Fighting YouTube page. If you're watching with us right now, thank you very much, and we want to certainly hear from all of you. If you're watching and listening after the fact because you're asleep like normal people, we welcome you as well. But if you have questions, thoughts about these cards tonight, leave them in the chat. We will get to them very soon. First things first, I am Mike Heck. Alex K. Lee is joining us as well, along with producer extraordinaire E. Casey Lydon. And gentlemen, what a night. Let's start with the big question from UFC Vegas 10. AK, I will start with you. Michelle Waterson edges it out over Angela Hill via split decision in the main event. It was a fantastic fight. It was a tremendous main event. It was one of those fights where, again, this seems to be the theme of 2020 UFC events. Do not judge a book by its cover. A lot of people complained about this main event. Turned out to be an excellent fight. I'm curious how you scored this fight, kind sir.
I'm of the unpopular opinion. I'll say first that I did actually go. This is going to make Casey mad, I think. I don't want to get our show off on a bad note, but I actually did have it 49-46 Waterson. So I was with the much criticized scorecard that was given by, I want to say, Sal D'Amato. Yeah, Sal D'Amato and I were on the same page. That said, the rounds were extremely close. I see a lot of people who are upset when they see 49-46, and I see the reaction like, this is crazy. But really, that's with me giving Waterson the second round. It was very close. So if you want to give Waterson the second round and say it was 48-47, I won't argue, but Waterson the second round. If you want to give Hill the second round, that's fine. A 49-46 does not reflect how close the fight actually was. Whether you went 49-46, 48-47, I still feel the right person won. So, I think the judges got it right. I do think it was at least 3-2 for Waterson.
Casey, you look like you don't agree. You get your cheek on your hand. You look like you're about to explode here. You're like a volcano.
Be gentle.
I bet you scored it for Angela Hill. Would that be my guess, just looking at your face right now?
I'm as a reasonable fight fan and journalist watching a fight, it was, I don't understand Alex K. Lee. It's honestly a mistake he's on this show right now, but first of all, great fight. Great freaking fight. Just phenomenal fight. $50,000 is fight of the night bonus. Doesn't do it justice. Just an awesome fight. Everyone that said this fight sucked as a main event, they suck. And just an awesome fight by both ladies, first of all. I did have it for Angela Hill. I think I had it like most reasonable people. I had 1, 2, and 5 for Angela Hill. And of course, I guess 3 and 4 for Michelle Waterson.
I scored it for Waterson. I thought Hill won the first two rounds. I thought Waterson won the last three. Michelle made adjustments, started punching a lot more, which seemed to turn the momentum a little bit. But, man, Angela is still game. She was still there. She did kind of slow down a little bit, which she admitted in the post-fight press conference. But it was understandable. It was her first UFC main event. But, again, I want to make something very clear here. Even though Angela Hill lost the fight, again, and she's done this time and time again over the last year, 18 months. She belongs in these types of opportunities, these types of headliner fights. She's one of the best 115 pounders in the world. I thought she won the Gedalia fight clearly. And if you scored this one for Angela Hill, like Casey did, I ain't mad at you, but what a great, great fight that was. And hats off to both ladies for just a tremendous battle. And for those watching right now, just a reminder, if you have questions, thoughts on these two cards tonight, leave them in the chat. We'll turn it over to you all very soon. But, let's flip to the other channel, shall we? The main event of Bellator 246, the final Paramount event for the promotion. We have a brand new bantamweight champion of the world, Juan Archuleta. That championship grit pays dividends. He lost the first two rounds, was in some dangerous spots, but he gets it done. So, Casey, let's start with you. Your thoughts on the main event over at Bellator at Mohegan Sun, Juan Archuleta, finally a major promotional world champion.
Oh, I thought it was overall, it's just an entertainment fight. It didn't beat out Waterson Hill, but it was just, I thought it was a great high level main event. And Archuleta like just showed that experience, man. Like I picked Mix to win second round submission, and I mean, it wasn't the craziest pick, and but Archuleta got through it, and props to him. And then once, I don't know if Mix had an adrenaline dump or those body shots really did were paying big dividends, like the commentators were saying. But man, Archuleta looked great, and he uses that big ass Bellator round cage perfectly. The way he was just circling out, and the way just Mix just couldn't get him in a good spot to get a takedown or get a leg or drag him to the ground. And Archuleta's gas tank is just top level. And yeah, when rounds three through championship rounds kicked in, oh my goodness, he was just he got even stronger. Just a great fight, and congratulations to Juan Archuleta.
Yeah, I honestly, I think if people had issue with the 49-46 for Watterson, I think they have more of an issue of 49-46 for Archuleta. I thought
that was weird.
Mix clearly won the first two rounds, and then Archuleta won the last three. But it was a great fight, and you know, great for Juan Archuleta to get the win. And at the same time, for Patchy Mix, this is a fight he absolutely needed to have in his young. So he's going to grow and learn a lot from this fight. AK, what did you think of the Bellator main event and the new champ?
Casey mentioned it, and it's something you and I emphasized when we were doing the preview for a lot of this weekend's fights. Experience really, really matters. Mix is insanely talented. I mean, again, you saw that in the first two rounds. Like, this kid is just a killer, especially with the grappling. But even when it came to the stand-up, he wasn't, like, out of his element. You know, he was just dealing with a guy who has more, again, more five-round experience, is more used to different scenarios on the feet. So, Archuleta outlasted him. That's what champions do. Never underestimate the heart of a champion. And Archuleta was not the champion going into this fight, but like we said, he's had that experience going to tough fights, both on the winning end and on the losing end. And he showed it. I only wish that my Toronto Raptors had shown the heart of a champion in their loss to the Boston Celtics. Yeah. I'm kidding. They played hard, but they lost. So that was just that's why I just slipped the Raptors in there. Still very proud of them, but they did lose. But no, Archuleta, I thought, really showed why he deserved the spot to be again slotted into one of the two spots for the vacant title. I think, and I'll end my statement with this, I think that he is one of the top 10 bantamweights in the world.
Oh,
interesting.
I thought that was for granted. He absolutely is.
I think if you ask your average person, they'll still need some convincing. But this is, if this is your first time seeing Archuleta fight, I would say
you're not in the UFC. Yeah, you know, that's all. He absolutely is the top 10 bantamweight.
This is our job. We have to let people know. Yes, I would put him in my mythical rankings. I always talk about it. On to the next one. I would put him eighth in the world right now. I put him eighth in the world. So I have him just ahead of Corey Sandhagen and a fighter who I think is actually very similar to Jimmy Rivera. And I have him behind, this is controversial, people might put him above this guy. I have him behind Dominic Cruz and then Cody Garbrandt, Pedro Munoz, Frankie Edgar, and the rest of the top three at bantamweight. So I have him solidly in the top 10.
That is an interesting point right there. I would like to get the viewers' opinions on that. So if you think Juan Archuleta is a top 10 bantamweight in the entire world, leave it in, because bantamweight's just so good. Like both companies, and even like around the world, 135 is just awesome. Just an awesome division, just loaded with talent. And congratulations to Juan Archuleta. Right before Archuleta became the champion, Neiman Gracie submits John Fitch in what turned out to be the final fight for John Fitch. The guy's had a long career. He's 42 years old. He's fought everybody, and Neiman Gracie gets this painful looking submission. It was like a double submission.
Yeah.
It was pretty nasty, but hats off. Great career for John Fitch. Casey, I want to start with you. You've been covering John Fitch longer than any of us have. What's kind of your overall thoughts on his retirement and the memory he's kind of left upon you as a fighter in the sport?
I really appreciate John Fitch as a fighter. I think, even though, yeah, his fighting style isn't the most entertaining, but that's what mixed martial arts is. You know, we need those type of grinders, you know, and in the sport, because that's just, everyone can't be, you know, just, you know, everyone can't be Douglas Lima. Everyone can't just be Kamaru Usman. I mean, that's what makes the sport so fun. There's all these different types of styles, and the fact that John Fitch has been fighting at a very high level for this long, you know, great, great. And if he wants to move on in life, good for him. And yeah, but man, what a submission! Holy, I think it was like inverted heel hook and a knee bar. I was like, good lord! It's like, and even like when Fitch tapped, he kind of like, I was like, oh, you got me. That was pretty awesome. That was pretty slick. You know, it was just a veteran move. You know, just like, well played, Mr. Gracie. And I've always enjoyed John Fitch, and I haven't necessarily enjoyed his fights, but I just enjoy just the variety that he brings to this sport.
I had one issue with that whole thing, and that issue is Neiman Gracie should have got the first interview. He should have got the first interview. Like, yeah. I know, let Neiman Gracie reflect in the victory, talk about the win, submitting a guy like John Fitch, who's been in many title fights. He's fought the who's who. Let him have his moment and then throw it to John and let him retire and answer those questions. I thought you kind of took the shine from Neiman in that moment, but maybe they talked about it before. Maybe Neiman's like, you go first. That's something Neiman would definitely do, but I kind of didn't like that. But overall, I mean, great win for Neiman Gracie. Congratulations. Happy trails to John Fitch as he moves on to the next step of his professional life. AK, what are your thoughts on the fight, Neiman Gracie's performance, and ultimately John Fitch calling it a career?
First on Neiman's performance, again, something we mentioned in our previews when we were talking about this is how is he going to bounce back from his first loss? And I was very optimistic that the matchup, you know, a potentially grappling heavy matchup would bring out the best in Neiman Gracie, who, of course, is an absolute artist on the mat. And it did. Like I said, we saw that finish. The way he set it up was just gorgeous. Even Fitch could almost see it coming well ahead of time, but couldn't do anything about it. It was almost like once the fight got to a certain point, you're already a dead duck. I mean, you can fight it, but that submission is coming, and he knew it, and thankfully tapped out before, you know, any serious damage was done. So passed the test was flying colors. The test of how does a undefeated guy react to a very, very humbling first loss. So he looked great, and he beat a guy in John Fitch, who again fought Rory McDonald, the guy who beat Gracie, to a very competitive draw not too long ago. So great job by Gracie. Fitch is the ultimate wet blanket, and I mean that as a compliment. I think, as Casey kind of mentioned, you know, he wasn't always a guy who people were looking forward to, but you always knew he could compete with pretty much anybody at 170 pounds and win. And this is not a guy who was a physical marvel. This is not a guy who was a star wrestler. It's well documented that in college he was actually a very mediocre amateur wrestler, and a lot of his opponents kind of used that, kind of took a dig at that until they got in the cage with him. And he smothered them for 15 minutes. So he knew how to MMA wrestle. He's probably one of the best MMA wrestlers of all time. And he beat guys like Paul Daly, Thiago Alves twice. You know, guys who on paper are like Diego Sanchez, guys who seem physically more impressive than him. And yet he found a way to win. He fought for a UFC title, which is great. He fought GSP, went to a decision with him. And then he won a World Series of Fighting title, which is nice. You know, beat Josh Berkman. So it was – or did Josh Berkman beat
him? No,
so it's the other way around. I apologize. Yes, that was the he got choked unconscious by Josh Berkman. I apologize
after
for that.
After he took a big shot. Yeah, he got hit hard. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I had to look that up just now. He beat Joao Zeferino, but still held the title, and then won a Grappler's Delight match with Jake Shields, which was kind of an uneventful fight, as you can imagine. So I think people should look fondly on his career. Not necessarily, again, kind of like Casey mentioned, they're probably not going to look at his fights as classics and at any time. There's no point they're going to go back. I'm going to watch like five or six John Fitch fights, really, you know, just make my day. That's probably not going to happen, but he definitely holds a notable place in MMA history.
If there's one fight you probably should watch with John Fitch, watch the Paul Daly fight. That pretty much defines who he is as a fighter, how opponents view him as a fighter, because he had Paul Daly all sorts of frustrated, yelling at the referee all night. It was hilarious. Casey, what do you want to say?
Actually, I want to say, if you want to watch a definitive John Fitch victory, go back in the UFC Fight Pass and go to UFC 153. That was the first big pay-per-view back in Brazil. John Fitch fought at that time a very, very high-level prospect named Eric Silva. And that was supposed to be Eric Silva's... It was supposed to be a bit of a showcase fight. I think he was like maybe... not the co-main event, but definitely a featured fight in the pay-per-view. And Eric Silva put a whooping on Fitch that first round. But then Fitch came back and then put a whooping on Silva. And actually, I think... did he actually finish him? No, he winning by decision. But I remember being in the arena sitting in press row for that. And it was just... I thought it was, I don't know what it was for me. I don't know what it was, but I just remember that moment. It was just a very spectacular feeling. Just to, because I think at that point that night, all the Brazilians were winning. It was crazy. Like, especially, you remember the very early UFC pay-per-views there in Brazil. It was just nuts. And then for this American guy just to smother this guy and just beat the crap out of Eric Silva and just kind of take that enthusiasm out of like the 20,000 people there. It was just, It's like, oh, this is so John Fitch. I love it. So
here comes the wet John blanket, Fitch moment. Brazil. Here comes the wet blanket. You're wet. John Fitch just won, and you're wet. That is the only time he won a fight of the night bonus in a victory in the UFC. So he only won two fight of the night bonuses, one for the GSP fight, which he lost a pretty lopsided decision. And then, as Casey mentioned, the Eric Silva fight. Yeah. So there you go.
There you go. There's some homework for everybody. If you want to look back on the great career of John Fitch, happy trails to you, sir. We appreciate all you've done for a great sport. Co-main event for the UFC, Otman Azaitar finishes combo worthy in just over 90 seconds. That guy is just a piston, man. He just gets right in your face and starts throwing bombs. He's super aggressive. He's only got one speed. But good Lord, good fight, good finish, gets it done. Let me ask you this, AK. Do you agree with the stoppage? Because Kama Worthy was none too pleased. He got up, and I don't know, like at points I thought he was like kind of wobbling around, but at other points I'm like, oh, he looks okay. Like, was it a good stoppage?
Yeah, if we're gonna come down on referee Herb Dean for his questionable stoppages, of which there have been many, by the way, I'm not letting him off the hook for any of some of the mistakes he's made this year. Let's also point out when he does well. So this was, I thought, a very good professional stoppage. Kama Worthy, if people watch the replay, he was not defending those shots. He didn't even have a hand up, not proven position. He was eating some very, very, very hard shots to the head. So I have no problem with Dean getting in there intervening. And they showed a little footage after of Worthy and Azaitar looking at the screen after, and it looks like Worthy kind of nodded at him like, oh, like you got me. I have a feeling Worthy does not remember a lot of what happened there, and probably after seeing the footage, I don't think he had as much of a problem with the stoppage.
I was shocked the way that the Kama Worthy approach that fight. Like, I knew he likes to get in these brawls and start swinging wild at times, but especially after watching Luis Pena fight, I thought he'd be a methodical about it, but he was just like, nope, let's just get in there and swing and bang and have some fun. So
he told you.
He ain't a DJ.
He ain't a DJ. He ain't a DJ. He don't care about records. He told you.
That's right. It was good for Kama. I mean, Kama will be back. He's an exciting fighter, but Otman, I guess Casey is going to move on to Fight Island. Dana White said it at the post-fight scrum. They don't have an opponent just yet, but they're going to try to book him on Fight Island for one of these cards. So me and AK are going to get into the matchmaking on Monday morning for everybody to check out. But what would you like to see next for Mr. Azaitar after that victory tonight on Fight Island?
First of all, great stoppage by Mr. Herb Dean. He gave Kama excellent chance to recover. And like AK said, when he went down on the ground, his arms were not up, and those were just it was a very good stoppage. No, I would love to see Otman fight fellow winner tonight, Mr. Bobby Green.
Ooh,
that's the fight.
That's a good one.
Actually, as soon as that fight was done, I was like, wait, he's a lightweight, right? I was like, okay, Bobby Green. That's the fight I want to see. So I want to see Bobby Green in the cage again. And yeah, that's the fight.
That's an interesting one. I have one in mind. I'm going to say it for Monday. That I think is really, really good. That'll fit the Fight Island theme, international matchup. But we'll get to that on Monday morning. But
I will say this. How do you say this? You know what? This guy is going to be on big cards. So I need to memorize his name right.
Azaitar.
Okay. Mr. Azaitar, he fights in a style that I could name any dude in the world who weighs 155 pounds and it would be an exciting fight. I think he's just one of those guys. So, I can name anyone, but that's a good fight. Yeah. So, he's an exciting personality and, obviously an exciting finisher and fighter. So, let's see who's going to be that first fighter to really, figure him out.
So he gets 50,000 for his win. Kevin Kroom, what a story that was. It finishes Roosevelt Roberts in a matter of seconds. Biggest underdog on the card. What a story he is. We're working on him for What the Heck, so we'll hear more of that story. And then the fight of the night obviously was the main event between Michelle Waterson and Angela Hill. But you know what? Let's throw it to the peeps. I know they have thoughts. They have a lot on their mind. I know there's other big stories, which I'm sure is going to be asked about. So might as well just let the peeps dictate, and we'll go from there.
Let me see what we got here.
Busy weekend here in MMA.
Yeah, I want to hear from the peeps. There's a lot of reactions on Twitter, a lot of positive reactions to the main event. Yeah. And the Ed Herman. Did we talk about the Ed Herman Mike Rodriguez thing? I'm sure we will at some point.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Okay. We'll get to it. I know the people want to know. We'll definitely get to it. Whether you guys ask about it or not, we will get to it for sure.
I'm sure we're going to talk about it.
Yes.
Oh, hey.
Did Vegas honor the Herman bets? It's a great question.
Yeah, we'll have to go to our Herman sources. Did Vegas honor the Herman bet? I mean, definitely.
It was a joke. Yeah,
for sure.
Mary Chang, hilarious.
All right, so, I mean, she opened the door for us, so we might as well talk about it. I mean, if you didn't watch the card and you're watching this to kind of figure out what happened, here's kind of what happened. Mike Rodriguez was tuning up Ed Herman for several minutes throughout that fight. At one point, he has him against the cage. He lands two big knees to the body, and Ed Herman just collapses to the mat. And Chris Tione, the referee, comes in, looks like he's going to stop the fight. He delays it. And then says, time. And Mike Rodriguez looks at him and goes, time? What the hell are you talking about? Says it's a low blow. He's giving Ed Herman 5 minutes.
He didn't say low blow. What he said?
He said nuts. Nuts.
Sorry.
Mike's like, what do you mean? He goes, nuts. Mike goes back in his corner. Ed Herman milks this thing. A-plus acting job. And
Hollywood.
The fight continues. So the fight restarts. Rodriguez drops him again, almost finishes the fight again. Third round, Ed Herman's going for a takedown. Rodriguez starts landing elbows. Could have been stopped again. Still doesn't get stopped. Ed Herman ends up miraculously submitting Mike Rodriguez with a nasty Kimura to end the third round. All sorts of craziness. Dana White was pissed off, as could be expected. I'll admit it, I was a little pissed off at how this all went down, but they are going to appeal. I did talk to Mike Rodriguez's manager, Tyson Chartier, so they are going to appeal. And then Dana White in the post-fight scrum said Rodriguez is still going to get his win bonus. So I asked his manager again, does this change anything? And he said, no, we're still going to appeal. I'm happy we got the win bonus. So a lot to unpack here. Mike Rodriguez got the big fat screw job tonight, but he's still going to get his money. So I'm happy about that. So AK, your thoughts on this whole situation with Steve Mazzagatti, AKA Chris Tione, according to Dana White?
Al Mack, congratulations for cashing in on Herman plus 380. Well done. Nice. Waximus won. Is Ed Herman come back one of the great? Yeah, I mean, we've seen people come back from you know, being down the scorecards. It's very rare you see someone come back from actually being finished. I would say the fight was technically over, except that it wasn't, and somehow coming back to win the fight. I don't blame. There was a comment earlier. Do we blame Ed Herman for the way he handled it? Hell no.
Absolutely.
Hell no. I think Luis Pena tweeted, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And look, that's a very glib, somewhat cynical way to look at athletic competitions, to look at the fight game. But again, Herman just really, really took advantage of it. He was clearly hurt. Okay, that knee up the middle, when they showed the replay, all it showed was two things. That the knee, at least initially, did not catch the cup at all. Some people said maybe on the rebound, I might have glanced it. Even if that's the case, it was obvious that that knee was buried into Ed Herman's chest. And that is what did the damage. That landed clean. That was a fight-ending knee. And Ed Herman was probably as surprised as anyone as to why the fight was paused. And then he heard the magic word of nuts and then said, okay, nuts. I will now grab my nuts and I will help Chris Tione sell the situation and then help myself, I believe, take a full 5 minutes of rest and get back into this fight. A little sneaky, but again, when you're in... Look, Herman has been fighting for 17 years. There's a lot of stuff he's just doing instinctually. I don't think he makes a calculated, deliberate decision to say, oh, I'm going to do this now after taking that knee to the body. No, it's just everything's just happening. He's reacting. He sees an opening, again, to rest, recover, and then pull off that miraculous finish around later. So I don't take anything away from Herman. I feel incredibly bad for Mike Rodriguez. He was 100% robbed of victory. That was a second round TKO via body knee to the body, and he should have had a win tonight.
Casey, what do you think? I mean, have you ever seen anything like this in all of your years covering the sport? Like this? I can't remember anything quite like this.
I don't remember the details of it, but I remember like how Josh Koscheck was famously faked an eye poke, I think, or faked a knee on the ground years ago. But I don't think, but this is by far the worst one. Dana White used to always say before every card, you know, every card has a holy shit moment, like something you've never seen before. You know, I think we've seen enough MMA now where that we don't get a holy shit moment every single card now. But to me, this was a holy shit moment because I don't think I've ever seen a fighter just during a fight just deliberately cheat and then milk it for 5 minutes. And I just never seen that. I don't I've seen guys, oh, I got eye poked, and the ref's like, are you sure you got eye poked? They're like, oh, yeah, I'm good, I'm good. Or they spit their mouthpiece out, things like that. Or maybe they fake a nut shot, but he took 5 minutes off when he was getting, And then, I was bitching online. I was complaining on Twitter, like, blah, blah, blah. And people were like, oh, what's Ed Herman supposed to do? I was like, you know, you get the W, you know? I was like, you know what? Get the W. But then in the post-fight interview, go, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it was in the groin air. You know, he did that whole, like, I don't know. Did it hit me in the balls? I'm not sure. Like, bro, if Mike Rodriguez puts a knee in your groin, you are going to know it. It is not, there's no, like, I don't know. It's like, I'm just, I got into mixed martial arts because I thought this was about honor and integrity, guys. I'm just a little heartbroken about the sport.
So if Anthony Smith had taken the title that night, you would have been okay with that?
AK?
Yeah, absolutely.
Would you, Casey?
No,
I've
been hard. Like, I'm rematch, still.
But that was a legit one, though.
People remember winners. Okay, look, Vitor Belfort to this day is still referred to as a former UFC light heavyweight champion, and that is one of the biggest, weirdest fluke victories ever. The cut, he opened up a cut on from the glove, a seam of the glove opened a cut on Randy Couture's eyelid, and the fight had to be stopped. And it was not a no contest; it was ruled a TKO victory for Vitor Belfort. And Vitor Belfort's a great fighter who has this amazing resume and can now kind of tack on champion on there. Do people care every time it's mentioned up how it happened? No, they don't care. The Anthony Smith thing, I'm on both sides of it. You know, I 100% respect they didn't take it. I actually love that about him. But at the same time, if he had, I would have thought it was great too. It would have been a nice feather in his cap for his career. He would have gotten another big fight with Jon Jones. So really he should have done it, but I don't think he regrets not doing it. I don't think anyone who's a fan of his should regret that he didn't do it. You know, it's just one of those funny kind of footnotes, what ifs, right? And I guess that's sort of what this Ed Herman situation is too. You know, you have to feel a little bit happy for Ed Herman, if only because he struggled so much to even just get in the cage this year through no fault of his own, opponents dropping out, testing positive for COVID. So he said himself he had like no paycheck for like 6 months or something. So at least from the UFC, I should say. So, it was good at least to see him get in there and get his win bonus. And also, nice to know Mike Rodriguez is too. It sucks that he has to have a loss in his record, but at least he's getting paid as well.
It'll be interesting to see once this appeal goes down if it actually gets overturned. I know things the majority of the time do not get overturned, most of the time. Very few examples of things getting overturned, but this will be interesting, I think. But Ed Herman must have watched Bellator 245 to get his acting skills going on, because there were some gnarly nut shots on that card.
Man.
But, the Raymond Daniels fight was so bad. Go ahead.
But no, I just want props to UFC and Dana White for paying Rodriguez his win bonus, though. I will take credit for it because I actually tweeted at Dana White, so I think he saw my tweet. I was like, Mr. White, it would be very generous of you if you paid Mr. Rodriguez his win bonus because he won that fight. I appreciate it as a fan.
And I think he saw it. I was like, this is the Otter Pops guy, right? The Otter Pops guy who's always trying to get on the bracket. He's like, I feel so bad. We've never had this guy on. I should really take his suggestion to make up for all the brilliant tweets of his that have not been featured on our broadcast.
We're even
you
now.
Tried so hard tonight to get on the broadcast, too. You tried so hard. I was just waiting for it. Just never happened. All right. What else we got? So much. Yeah. So much to talk about.
Okay.
What a crazy night.
Just because I see this right now, this is from last night.
Thoughts on Kat Zingano? I personally thought she looked off. I mean, she even admitted that it wasn't a great performance. It wasn't a perfect fight, but you know, this is her first fight in a long time. First fight in a new promotion. She fought a very tough, scrappy fighter that is nearly impossible to finish. Who's been in there with some of the best 45ers in the world. It's been a long time. The last fight she had was that crazy fight with Megan Anderson that ended in such a bizarre way. And then she's gone through all these different things in her life. And to finally get back in there, I'm sure there are a lot of nerves and a lot of things in her mind. So I think I would attribute it to that. And she knows she's got some things to work on. She's going to go back to the drawing board, as she said, and she's going to try to improve and get better. But, you know, if she fights Leslie Smith or fights Julia Budd in her next fight, which both of those could be potential options, we'll see how she bounces back from there. But to outlast a scrappy, scrappy, tough girl like Gabby Holloway last night, the way that she did after that amount of time off, I thought it was a pretty good performance, and she was pretty honest about it. Anybody else want to give their thoughts on Kat's performance last night?
I'll admit I actually did not get to see that fight. Again, I was too busy watching my Raptors blow a game seven, but the optics of it are—I understand—are difficult for people. I'm sure people will see, oh, this is her debut fight. They lined her up with, you know, a relatively unknown fighter in Gabby Holloway. Why did she not, whatever, so submit her or knock her out inside the first round? Like I said, Holloway, really tough fighter. And secondly, again, this is Kat's first fight in almost 2 years. December 2018, her last fight. New promotion, so kind of changes there. And of course, her first fight of the COVID era. So a lot of things working against her. Again, not to make excuses, like again we said, she herself has already admitted she knows it wasn't her best performance. But I think facing a higher level of competition will cause her to step up her game. I don't think we've seen the last of really primes in Gano. Yeah, I do think she has some really good performances left in her. So it's unfortunate. Yeah, people may have been a little disappointed by her Bellator debut, but I think she can only go up from there.
Casey.
She's going up. This is only her second fight at 45, right? Her first fight was Megan Anderson, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So it's only a second fight in 45. When she fought Megan Anderson, the fight ended like in 2 minutes when her eyeball got sliced with a toenail.
Yes.
So we can't even count that like as any actual in-cage experience. So, and then obviously the COVID promotional change. She's had lots of health issues outside of the cage. And she still won on two judges' cards, 30-27. Against a woman that came in heavy, too. So that's
true.
Kat Zingano, while she didn't look like, oh, she's gonna smash Cyborg, no one thought that. I thought it was fine. It was a Kat Zingano fight against I think Kat Zingano just actually has to put more muscle on or something, or maybe go back down to 35, because if she wants to fight at the highest level. Unfortunately, actually, Bellator doesn't have a 35 division for some weird reason. But it was a performance and a win, and I wouldn't put too much. I don't know. I wouldn't raise too many red flags about Zingano's performance.
Yeah, and Liz Carmouche got her debut win tonight via submission. So good.
Thank you. Thank you for the question, Dr. Alan Grant. Don't get eaten by any dinosaurs.
That's awesome. Spoiler.
Thank you for. Oh, spoiler. Sorry.
Jeez, it's on Netflix, guys. Check it out. The dinosaurs are in a park. It's safe. Everything's safe.
He does it. He survives, Casey.
Okay.
We've all seen it.
This isn't really a question, but just...
This is not a question, but...
A lot of love for Sabina Mazo. Finally. Yeah. Gets that big finish. Lands that patented head kick and turns it into a rear naked choke. Starts off the night in a big way. That fight was a lot of fun. Like, it was pretty much the way I laid it out on the preview show. But Mazo gets the finish. Big win for her. What'd you think, Casey? That was a fun one.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Sabina Mazo. I actually am a big fan of Justine Kish. I'm very happy she's at 125 now, because I know a lot of her early UFC fights were at 115, and she just didn't look good. And I think Sabina Mazo looked great, and I thought it was, the great high kick and finish with the choke. Good on her. I can't wait to see her fight again.
Yeah, for sure.
Where would we put her? Like, I'm trying to think, like, in the division. Is she like kind of right outside the top 15? Just because she's a prospect, I guess, kind of right outside that top 15 or?
Easy fight. This is an easy fight. This is an easy matchmaker.
Oh, you got one?
Mazo versus Lipsky is the fight to make. That's the only fight to make.
I like it. What do you think, AK?
Is he muted?
Hey, AK, you're muted.
Come on. Sorry, I was muted. I was drinking water. People do not need to hear me drink water. They may want to. Some people enjoy that sort of thing, but I'm not, you know, that's not my OnlyFans.
We have
only
lots of comments about your water drinking later.
That's my OnlyFans.com. If you want to hear the sound of me drinking water, that's on there. That's part of it. I thought she looked great. I love, there's so many things to like about Mazo. For one, she has the gimmick of, she came in, you know, off these two, like, into the UFC, into these two, like, insanely exciting head kicks. So, of course, she comes to the UFC and the reputation is, oh, she's going to be kicking everyone's head off. That's not always how these things work out. She lost her first fight. But rather than see her hype train derail, she has bounced back with three really, really good performances. The Aldridge fight was really entertaining. Probably, it was a closer fight than the Dobson one. But she really showed, again, why she's so highly touted. And then, of course, by the time you get to that fourth UFC fight and, the last win of the streak, Sorry, this current, you know, last win for now. You want to see a finish, and that's exactly what she delivered. And she was spamming those head kicks. You know, Justine Keach is just too tough for her own good. You know, I'm sure her corner was screaming, watch the kick. But Justine Keach's great chin, you know, so she's like, oh, I'll just take it. I'll block it. I'll take it. And she was getting kicked the body. She was getting kicked in the head. From the first round to the last, she was eating head kicks. I don't know if I've seen someone so flyweight to take that many head kicks. And, of course, it was just one too many by the end. And Tommaso is just great, great leg power. And hurt her and got the finish. So, so much like with Mazo, very young. She's only, I think, 23 years old. A great representative of Colombia. So, yeah, nothing but good things ahead. I love the idea of the Lipski matchup. I think she was one of the stars of the night. On a night where a very eventful UFC Vegas 10 event, I think she was one of the stars of the show.
I agree. That was the first time Justine Keach has been finished in her career as well.
Wow. Really?
In her amateur days.
Wow. Yep.
First finish, first time. She's lost a split decision and a unanimous decision in the UFC, and then that was the first time she was finished. So, good on her. Great performance for Sabina. I think her and Lipski is the fight to make at this point.
No issues with that. I don't know if we actually said this, but did we talk about this?
Warrior bonus for today's fights from each promotions. I don't think Bellator does bonuses.
No, they don't do it. But did we announce the UFC bonuses?
We did.
Oh, yeah. We did. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Kevin Kroom, mm-hmm. Otman Azaitar, and then the fight of the night was the main event between Michelle Waterson and Angela Hill. So. Right.
Well deserved. I know sometimes people roll their eyes when it's always the main event always seems to get it by default, but this was definitely a night where there was multiple, I think, worthy fight of the night candidates, and this one clearly stood head and shoulders. I think it's one of the best fights of the year. I think it's, you know, for people who were critical of, not critical, but I'll just straight up say it, haters of WMMA, of women's MMA, you're going to look real foolish by the end of this year, because I think three of the top 10 fights are women's MMA fights. Number one is probably going to be Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Zhang Weili. I think this fight is absolutely up there. Michelle Waterson, Angela Hill, and of course, Lisa Versosa and Julia Stolyarenko from that same, Zhang Jędrzejczyk weekend. So that's for me, it's three locks right now. If I was making my list, say three locks for my top 10. I don't know how the top five is going to look, but I think Stolyarenko, Versosa, and Zhang and Jędrzejczyk are in there. So awesome fight tonight.
And Dana White also said during the post-fight press conference after he announced the bonuses that all the guys and gals who got finished this tonight were going to get some extra cashola as well. So
let's make that the norm. Let's make that the norm. Can we just say if you get a finish, you are immediately like you're $50,000? Like, obviously, you know, there can be discretion if it's a controversial – excuse me, if it's a controversial finish. But otherwise, I think if you get a clear-cut finish – automatic extra 50 G's, or I mean, I would say more than that, but you let's start small before we, you know, start changing everything in the UFC, because they're not going to do that. So yeah, 50 grand if you get a finish. I hope everyone gets at least something close to that for the hard work they put in today.
Do you need to drink some water, AK?
I'm a little parched, but now I'm self-conscious about it because we've talked about it too much. And again, I have to now, again, onlyfans.com/AK Lee. 29.99 a month, and you will get to see such things as me drinking water, and I will even give you a peek of my rankings.
if you know
what I'm saying.
Right, I don't even know what these
and by rankings are. I mean rankings.
Great. Now we can't monetize this. Way to go. Jeez, guys.
We have the stats, by the way, from the Waterson Hill fight. UFC stats, the official UFC stats, I believe. Yes.
Before you read the stats, mm-hmm. remind the viewers and listeners who you scored the fight for, especially round five.
I scored the fight for Waterson.
And how did you score round five?
I also scored for, I gave her 2, 3, 4, and 5.
All right. Now read the stats.
Okay. The stats are very, very close. They're very close. They're slightly favorable towards Hill. Okay. But it's total significant strike counts, 131 to 128 for Hill. That's overall. Hill won rounds 1, 2, and 5. Just significant strikes. The first one, 26-21 round 1, 33-31 round 2, 39-37 round 5. So this is how narrow these rounds are. This is why I really feel like, regardless of how you scored it, this fight was close. With the two rounds Waterson won, 13-11 round 3, 26-22 in round four. So round three, one of the ones which I think most people thought Watterson won, was actually also super close. She was 1-for-18 on takedowns, so not a spectacular number. And Casey, you're not going to like this. I think it's the sheer volume may have won Watterson the decision. Total strikes, 361-278. And that's just attempts. That's just attempts, not percentage. She actually landed a fairly low percentage. So sorry, Casey. Volume, I think volume may have won the day, unfortunately.
You suck. I was waiting to get the reaction.
Those are the numbers.
Was round three the very dominant round by Michelle when she had Angela Hill down on the ground? Or was that round four? Yeah. That was round three.
Round three. And okay. That's what it seemed like. But again, significant strikes, just 13-11. Though total strikes, it was the biggest. It was the total strikes. It was the clearest round by far, 36-18 for Watterson. Every other round was neither fighter landed no more of a difference than five total strikes between them. So that was, quote unquote, the most dominant round, but I really feel every round was except for maybe round three, was fairly close. Look, I have no problem with the Angela Hill scorecard either. I thought Watterson edged out four of the five.
It's a good fight. It's a great fight.
Awesome fight.
Excellent.
Awesome fight.
What else we got? Billy Quarantillo should fight Alex Caceres or the winner of Hakeem and Zubaira. I like all those options.
We gotta take these notes. For onto the next one.
Yep.
Gotta take notes. Steal these ideas. Not give this guy any credit.
Although I already booked Alex Caceres to fight Lerone Murphy on Fight Island. So
he's off the list then.
He's off the list.
Ooh, you know what? We haven't got, because there were so many fights tonight. A fight that we haven't got any questions about, but I want to talk about, is Miss Eubanks versus the Raging Panda. That was a great fight.
There's Avila got 10-8 in the second round, and people still thought it was like, this is the best fight of the night so far. It was a good fight. Avila just is like, she's such a wild woman. She is such a wild woman. Just gets in there and just throws bombs. Like, and at the beginning of that first round, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be just like the Mazzani fight. Like, she started landing those shots. She was charging forward, that ha ha ha. But Eubanks, great performance. I think if there's any fighter on either of these cards tonight that flew under the radar more, I can't think of one who flew under the radar more than Shajara Eubanks. Everyone thought that Avila was just going to go in there and do her thing and just use Eubanks as a stepping stone, so to speak, to get to a top 10 fight. But Eubanks, well done. I mean, that was a great performance. She's getting better, and she's definitely, 135 is definitely the place for her to be. No doubt about that.
Yeah, I thought Eubanks, I don't remember if I thought she won, but I thought, maybe I did think, I thought she beat, I think Aspen Ladd maybe a year or so ago.
That was a really close fight.
It was a very close fight. I thought Eubanks was going to get smoked in that fight, but I was like, man, Eubanks got hands. But God, I just, for Julia, I just really feel like it kind of sucks that that 20-second victory she had over Mazzani a few months back, I think that actually hurt her in the sense that she needed more cage time, and I think that's what hurt her in this fight. She just hasn't had enough time in that UFC octagon, because once you got in deep waters, yeah, Eubanks has just had more experience in the UFC, and it really showed. Man, but that second round when Avila's just throwing those hammers, and then she throws that kick for no reason. And Eubanks is like, yoink, took that kick and grabbed and took her down, and then everything changed. Because up to that, Avila was actually winning that first, I don't know, minute of that fight. I just wondered what would happen if Avila didn't throw that kick, because she was doing so good in the stand-up, just with her hands. But, Sarge is great. I can't wait to see both of them again.
Yeah, I mean, you have to imagine, and Julia didn't really play this off like it was a big deal in any of our conversations, but she's had more changes to her fights than like anybody I can think of over the last year. Just the road to get to this fight tonight, she's booked with Nico Montano three different times on three different dates on two different countries, and then finds out that she's not going to Abu Dhabi anymore and takes a fight 9 days later. Like, it was just, it has to affect you in some way, especially when you're ramping up camps and you have to stop them. Then you have to ramp it up again and then you stop them. Then you have a new date and you have to scientifically plan it out in a certain way so you peak at the right time and then you fight 9 days later. Like, that has to have something to do with it. And I'm not making excuses for Julia. I'm not taking anything away from Shajara, because I thought Shajara's game plan was absolutely perfect, and she deserved that win tonight, and she looked great. That's a huge win over someone with a lot of hype and a lot of momentum. So Sajara Eubanks is in great shape right now, and I think whatever shine Julia had and whatever kinds of fights they were looking for her, if she had beat Sajara, I think you got to put Sajara in that spot. If you're going to bump Julia to a top 10 fight, I think Sajara deserves a top 10 fight now after that performance tonight as well.
Avila remains a talented and lovable dork. I believe it was on your show. I don't know if it was on your show, Mike. I think that she said the line about there will be blood, yes. but it won't be mine. Like, she had to clarify, oh, there will be blood, not my blood. Which is again, if you've ever seen a Julia Avila, it's such a Julia Avila thing to do. Like, I just want to make this clear. There's going to be blood, mostly hers, maybe some of mine, but mostly hers, which is, you know, her way of saying, I'm going to win the fight. And her trying to be a badass, I guess, which is, she doesn't really fit that profile, but she certainly fought like a badass today. As did Eubanks. Cause you mentioned, guys, like, some of those exchanges on the feet were just the very first one right in front of the camera. Just, you could, those, they were just banging. Yeah. Exactly. It was like they're hitting pads, like the pads were each other's heads.
Yeah.
And it really felt like one of them was going to drop. But Eubanks has an incredible chin, which is going to serve her very well in her UFC career. Because, yeah, she can weather the storm. There might be strikers who are stronger than her, maybe technically better than her. But as long as she can kind of withstand those flurries, she's going to be able to go to the ground, which I think she's going to have an advantage against a lot of people. So Eubanks looked really, really good tonight. And again, as I said, kind of with Mazo, Eubanks came in with a lot of hype. It was very much diffused by issues making weight at 125 and then some losses she took. But she is, you know, people are very high on her. And back-to-back wins now, you know, you see why. So it's always nice to see people kind of bounce back from that initial hype and kind of build it back in front of our eyes again.
And then shouting out the fine folks of Western Massachusetts.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, buddy.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Springfield, stand up.
Those ladies that with Mark Henry, they seem to have a pretty solid group. Was it Claudia Gadella and
Chikagian.
Yeah, so they got... Yeah, they got 15, 25, and 35, you know, all very, very talented ladies. So Mark Henry is doing a very good job with them.
Who's the what's her name? Why is it Erin Blanchfield's there too?
Oh, she's there too. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Is she fighting for the Invicta title
she's fighting Pearl Gonzalez.
Oh, that's a great fight. That's a good fight.
The vacant belt. That is a great fight. And Billy Q too. That guy is on a roll right now. That fight was awesome.
It was.
Between him and Kyle Nuss. It was great. Roxanne versus Grasso. Maybe. I mean, if they booked it, I'd be fine with that.
I think it's actually a step back for Roxanne.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the danger of a savvy fighter like Roxanne, because, like, you would book this fight to try to put Alexa over.
Mm-hmm.
But Roxanne loves these kinds of fights where she could shut down those trains and shut down that momentum. That's that plays right into Roxanne's hands. Grasso, who do we pick for Grasso?
I feel like we had a really good, like, we were set with her, weren't there? Didn't we kill on the show? We picked a fight for her and dusted our hands off. someone else who fought recently, was it? No, we didn't say.
Who did Grasso just
Macy
defeat?
Not Macy Barber. We didn't want to see her fight Macy Barber, did we?
I thought you picked. You might have picked Macy.
I may have. What did you say?
I don't remember. It was the obvious choice of what it was a week ago. We do so many of these.
We should really watch our own show. this show. I heard it. I heard the show was good. I just don't listen to it myself. If I'm being honest.
I thought it was a no-brainer. Was it Araujo?
It might have been Araujo, right? Because they both won recently.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what it was. Araujo versus Grasso. That's exactly what the fight was.
Who
will Roxzilla fight next?
Yeah.
I
She's fought I almost Jessica, everyone.
Jessica I?
Ooh.
But I know Jessica's dealing with gallbladder stuff and things like that. I think that makes sense. I think that's a good fight. I mean, that's really it. That's really like the only fight she could take right now.
Who's Caitlin Chikagian fighting?
Jessica Andrade.
Oh, I can't wait to Roxy see
Roxy get the winner of that fight. But I have a feeling they'll. It's funny, you guys mentioned, you know, that Grasso would be a step back. I have a feeling they may continue to make. I think they view Roxy as a gatekeeper, unfortunately. Perhaps somewhat fairly. Let's be honest. She is a veteran. She has been around. She's fought everyone. People know her as a tough challenge, but I don't know how seriously they take her as a contender. And I feel like the matchmakers probably view her that way as well. So unfortunately, I think while it's fun to maybe matchmake and look at the top 15, I don't know if they are going to keep give her another top 15 opponent next. Though the division isn't like super deep. So yeah, it could go either way. But I could see them, again, I could see them kind of giving her another gatekeeper matchup.
Andrew Lee's lost 3 fights in a row. Yeah,
close ones though, eh?
Well, Lauren Murphy won,
right?
Which pretty much most people thought she won. And then before the JoJo Calderwood, which was very close too. And this fight was, I saw so many fights tonight, actually. I kind of forgot this fight already.
There's pretty nothing in Andrea Lee's last 3 fights tells me that she's not a top 15 flyweight in the UFC. Yeah. Let me put it that way. I know the results aren't there. I know people are like, what do you mean? She's lost 3 straight fights. That's all you need to point to. But again, it's very easy to just look at the numbers. If you look at the performances, again, she was right there with JoJo. She's right there with Lauren Murphy. I thought she was right there for the most part with Roxanne Modafferi. I think I scored the fight for Lee. Maybe I wasn't watching the fight closely enough. So maybe I was wrong there, but I thought it was certainly close enough to make an argument for it. So this could have easily been 3 split decisions. Losses in a row for Lee, which is, again, that just tells you to go either way. Does that, now again, that's not, you know, that means she needs to make changes. Clearly there's changes she needs to make to get over that hump, but she's still I think is still a good fighter, very talented, and some of you can keep matching up with people in the top 15. Maybe she doesn't want that. Maybe it's time to take a step back for her as well, but yeah, nothing tells me that she's not a potential contender in 2021.
Sure. Thoughts on Vanessa Porto signed with Belt? Brilliant. The UFC missed the boat big time. Bellator scooped it right up. Like, this is the biggest no-brainer signing they could have done.
Yeah.
How does that happen? How does I thought there's like this very direct pipeline from Invicta to the UFC. So I have to wonder, do we know if there was an – I guess we'll find out at some point. If there was an offer made from the UFC that wasn't to her liking, did Belter somehow make a better offer? Or did the UFC pass on her for whatever reason? I don't know. But it would seem strange that she wasn't on their radar and, you know, added to their roster.
I could be wrong, but outside of Adam weights, which the UFC obviously doesn't have that weight class, I think the only Invicta champion that hasn't gone to the UFC is Vanessa Porto and Sarah Kaufman.
And Sarah Kaufman obviously had fought for the UFC. So, yeah. So, really, right, just looking at it at a glance, does seem like it's just Porto. Our thoughts is clearly – Joseph Bozar, our thoughts clearly is we're baffled. I think it's a great, great signing for Bellator. Yeah. A future opponent for Aleem McFarlane.
Yep.
Probably might be the best opponent that she's lined up with. And I would be fine with her getting an immediate title shot if we're being honest. But,
sure.
Yeah.
She's earned it.
There's another champion – Pam Sorensen has not been signed. I'm sorry. She's a 45er. How did they not sign her? I don't get it.
We know why. Come on. We're talking about the UFC 145 division here. It's not a priority for them.
Right. But at least you got something, for Christ's sake. What else we got?
That's a deep cut. I like that. Yeah. But I hadn't even thought of it. You know, this is a lot of stuff happened this week, but
excellent signing.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know,
Just Guy versus Roxy for the most award fighter award winner gets on Rogan.
Most award fighter. Roxanne does not strike me as. Has she mentioned wanting to be on Rogan? I definitely did.
Roxy doesn't like doing interviews at all.
Yeah. Yeah, even her post fight today, she just wanted to get out of there.
She's a sweetheart, but. Yeah, you do so many interviews. What else can you be asked at this point? You know.
Yeah, she's too sweet for that show. Sorry, Joe, but I do think I don't know if her personality would mesh with the usual tone of that show. Let me put it that way. I'm sure Joe would do a fine job of making her feel welcome. But
now the more I think about it, I really want to see. I don't watch any Joe Rogan, but I will watch Roxanne Modafferi on Joe Rogan for the full 2 hours.
He's done some very good fighter interviews. I have to give that. Usually when he has fighters on, you're going to get stuff that you've never heard before. You know, there's that comfort level that fighters have with him that they just do not have with almost any other interviewer on the planet. So, in that sense, sure, I'd like to see Rox. I think would be way more for the stipulation, and also would probably be a much more headline worthy guest. I think we'd get some quotes out of that should that happen. Let's put it that way. Trying to be diplomatic about this.
Bang bang, Crystal bang, Angela won, but here we are. I ain't mad at you for saying that.
Yeah, not at all. Is Angela Hill? She's not officially part of the Crystal crew, right? Is she?
I think she's
honorary.
Honorary, yeah. I think the Crystal crew just they're trying to get her in. I think she's been busy training, but yeah. now she has a little time now. Yeah.
She seems too intelligent for that, so that's why I didn't assume that she was part of the Crystal crew. So I don't think so. Wow. Oh, sorry.
Why don't you drink some water or something? How'd the Raptors?
Jeez. And to go back,
that's not gonna help.
And to go back to the Andrea Lee thing, Andrea Lee versus Macy Barber is the fight to make. By the way, that is the fight for Macy.
I was thinking Angela.
I was like, oh, we're talking to Angela Hill and then
no
Angela
cross promotion. Yeah. I was like, all right, let's do that.
Yeah, yeah, I like
49-46 Watterson. That's ridiculous. AK, explain yourself again.
Well, who tweeted that?
Right, Sandy Pham.
Sandy Pham.
The rounds are close. I just read the stats. I don't know if Sandy Pham missed the stats. The rounds are so close. If you're just looking at significant stats, which I think is more relevant than total strikes. Actually, if you're looking at total strikes, it's actually better for Watterson than significant. Yeah, I thought the rounds were close. I think it's very hard for us to gauge how hard some of the hits actually are. Like I said, if you scored it, if honestly, you could score it 49-46 Hill, I think, and I wouldn't have a problem with it. But for me, I thought Watterson did enough to win rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5. 2 certainly could have gone either way, but either way, I feel very comfortable with 48-47 Watterson. So for me, that round 2 was not a stretch. It's just one more round. I know it looks so much worse. 49-46 sounds so much more dominant than 48-47. I understand how it sounds, and I understand the optics of it. But again, anyone who actually saw the fight will tell you which rounds you. Oh, sorry, that wasn't meant to shot. I'm sure Sandy Pham, I guess,
not watching the fights with the same eyes you are.
Anyone, including you guys, and including Sandy Pham, who asked the question, we all saw the fight, and I think most people could see how close those rounds are. So I don't think it's a robbery by any stretch, and I don't think that 49-46 is crazy. Me and Sal D'Amato can take all the shots. It's fine. We've been in this business for a long time. It's fine. We're used to it. But I don't think it's ridiculous. I think if people rewatch the fight, then they'll feel the same way too. They're like, yeah, it's close.
I don't even want to talk about the groin kick.
So brutal. Waxmas won. It was the greatest groin kick ever. I showed everyone who was around me at the time. I was like, even people who like weren't interested in MMA, I was like, you got to see this.
The first one was so bad. The second one was the most brutal thing ever. Like just hearing him like cry, like he was crying, and I don't blame him.
Reaction was so, what a beautiful picture. Thank you, Bellator photo. What a gorgeous, gorgeous photo. Poor Peter Sinanek. I've obviously, any entertainment I find from this, I feel so, so bad for him. Because that could be like a life-changing groin shot. And I know people are going to, yeah. I'm sure there's a picture of him too, literally kind of crawling on the ground, throwing his mouthpiece out, pounding the ground in frustration. And look, it was an accident, but this was the second spin kick to the nards, correct?
Yeah, like within a minute.
If you're Raymond Daniels, someone with so much experience kickboxing and in karate and just in martial arts in general, you just can't have that happen. Okay, I think he was very lucky to get away with a no contest. Again, I'll be honest, I didn't watch the whole fight, but just from what I'm gathering from the situation, you have to control your weapons, right? The referees tell you in these situations, after a foul, you got to control your weapons. That is not controlling your weapon. If you land a spin kick that area, you have to know that throwing that again is potentially going to do it again. I know it's taking a very potent weapon off the table for Raymond Daniels, but you just can't do that. You know, you can't land a shot like that. I have so much sympathy for Stanonic.
Normally, I'm very like, oh, sorry. Oh, there we go. I'll say normally
Davion Franklin versus Ross Hilton. I mean Franklin won the first two rounds, and I guess in the third round he landed a couple of shots. I didn't watch the fight to be clear, but just going through Twitter, apparently Davion Franklin started landing shots to the back of Ross Hilton's head, mm-hmm. and the referee stopped the fight and went to a technical decision.
When for Franklin,
30-27 for Franklin. Franklin. Yeah,
I saw that. So that was that the very first fight, the very first fight of the night.
On Bellator. Yes.
Yeah, I thought they made the right call. That it was okay. It was very. If you watch the fight, I've got the guy's name. Who's the guy that won? Franklin.
Franklin won.
Yeah, Franklin. He was dominant. He was like 10-8-ing that guy, And basically, they got it was very similar to John Jones versus Matt Hamill in the sense that Franklin was just beating the crap out of him top, and he just simply ran out of ideas. So he just, you know, and the guy in the bomb just turtled up, and then he just hit him one time in the back of the head. But it wasn't like just out of nowhere. It was just, I was beating him. Dude, the guy's dead. And the ref is like, he can take a couple more. So eventually these guys just kind of run out of ideas, and then that's what happened. So it would have been like if Matt Hamill were defeating John Jones in a sense. You know, it was like, we know who really won that fight. But if you're wondering what happened in that fight. But going back to the groin shot, normally I'm very like, oh, deductive point. I can't believe, you know, they allowed that. But I actually sympathize with Raymond Daniels here because when he did throw that spin kick, remember his opponent, what was his opponent's name? Raymond Daniels was his opponent.
Stanonic.
Stanonic was also threw he was southpaw and he threw a head kick. But that kick actually kicked Raymond Daniels in the back when Raymond Daniels was actually spinning to throw his own spin kick. So by that just slight hit in the back, that was enough for that kick to misdirect and take a, like how I think Raymond Daniels said, that's his grenade launcher, and he took a grenade launcher, you know, right in the groin. So it was unfortunate, but I truly think it was just unfortunate, and I wouldn't even say it's reckless. It was just two guys throwing head kicks or two guys throwing kicks at the same time. These things happen in MMA.
One in a million, Doc. In a million. That's Stanonic's. That's Stanonic's story for the rest of his life. Guys, you won't believe. You know, someday, 30 years from now, people are talking about, man, this is the craziest groin shot I've ever seen. And Stanonic will be like, let me tell you a story, my friends.
Oh, but the howl, the banging on the mat.
Oh,
I was like,
it terrible.
Was, yeah,
makes I want to see the cup. That cup didn't make it. There's no way that cup made it. That cup cracked in half. Like that cup has to be in two pieces.
Excellent Seinfeld reference, by the way, AK.
million, Doc.
By the way, can I just say, because I'm surprised no one's talked about him yet, but that's what happens in these cards that are this exciting. I want to see Alexander Romanov fight every Saturday.
I like him. I mean,
good God. He's exciting in the cage. He's a killer in the octagon. Then he does it. Like, he's the friendliest killer I've ever seen. Like, that post-fight interview, he was smiling. It was just so happy and friendly. Like, you just never would see that. Like, it was awesome. I want to see this guy fight all the time.
It's like a big, cuddly Moldovan bear.
Romanov.
Scary man.
He will throw you head over head. That suplex.
Crazy.
I love that.
That was like an 800-pound man. He threw head over head.
The look on Roque Martinez's face was like, whoa.
I noticed that too when they showed the replay after the fight was over. That was a great shot. Rocky's no joke, man. No. That guy's nails. He's super tough. And you can tell through the fight. He took a beating. That was a mauling. But Romanov, I mean, they kept saying, like, I kept seeing on Twitter because the commentators were like, Alexander Romanov just sent a message to the whole heavyweight division. And some people were just like, you know, fight somebody in like the top 30 and then we could start saying that. But I watch other promotions outside of the UFC because Rocky's a legit fighter. Like, he's not a top 15 UFC fighter, but this guy's been in some wars and he's got some legit wins under his belt. So he's no slouch. He's not a pushover guy whatsoever. So that was an impressive performance. And plus, that fight got booked pretty quickly. So hats off to Rocky for even taking a fight like that and was willing to do it. But I like Romanov. I want to see this guy just fight all the time.
Romanov versus Rocky Martinez was the most Ryzen heavyweight fight I've ever seen in the UFC. That
100%.
How was Lenny Hart not calling them out? Like, that was the most. It was just like, I was like, I go, I've seen this fight in Ryzen. I've had to. It just felt that way. It was just, I love heavyweight fights where the guys go, you know what? If they want to fight for shirt on, go for it.
I'll tell you what matchup we need to see, and it's because we've gone so long without mentioning him. I need to see Romanov fight Khamzat Chimaev. Put your money where your mouth is. Go up to 265, my friend. Get on that diet. I'd get a couple of, I don't know, a couple of weeks of heavy eating and get up there and grapple with Romanov. That is now the fight that I want to see. There is your obligatory Khamzat Chimaev mentioned. So shout out to all the stream monsters out there who are waiting for that one.
Triple booking. Apologies. Since people keep giving me crap about it, I know I said Khamzat Chimaev in the Wonder Boy interview. People kept giving me crap. Listen, when you say the name so many times, eventually you're going to get it wrong. You're not even going to like realize that you said it wrong. But I rarely go back and watch my work. But when that was when people kept telling me about it on Twitter and stuff, I went back and watched it. I'm like, ah. And then Wonderboy even asked me how to pronounce it, and I still said Khamzat. I felt like an idiot. But by the way, Romanov versus John Volante is the fight to make.
Oh.
That's the fight.
I can see it.
What else are you gonna do? Hey, Kaylee, thank you.
Yes, Tristan was calling for a Chimaev. Well, Tristan actually commented earlier, like, I can't wait till next week. I guess he was saying, you know, when Chimaev actually fights, so we can talk about Chimaev. Like, we don't need to wait for Chimaev to fight to mention Chimaev. We can mention Chimaev whenever we want.
That's right. It's our show.
I think we mentioned it on like 90% of our podcasts and video programming since Fight Island. So don't worry about that. We'll get to Khamzat Chimaev talk no matter what. Don't worry. It doesn't matter if he's fighting or not. After next week, start this. Khamzat the suit Chimaev. We'll definitely talk about him next week though for sure. But I had to sneak one in there for my boy. So
next week's card is ridiculous. That is a ridiculous. Let's talk about next week.
We've been here for an hour. Let's talk about next week now.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll round off with that. So we got obviously Covington Woodley, and I don't know if you noticed the promo, but there was a certain website that was flashed across it the entire promo. Just throwing that out there. It would be MMA fighting. then Cerrone versus Nico Price. Khamzat Chimaev versus Gerald Meerschaert. That's a really interesting fight. Johnny Walker versus Ryan Spann's ridiculous. Mackenzie Dern's back against Random Marcos. Kevin Holland versus Darren Stewart is a great fight. Mirsad Bektik versus Eduardo Garrigori. We got Bueno Silva versus Mauro Romero Barella. Jordan Espinosa versus David Dvorak. Sarah Alpire versus Jessica Rose Clark. Randy Costa versus Jurny Newsom is going to be ridiculous. Those two are going to beat the brakes off of each other. Andre Yule, Irwin Rivera, Derek Minner versus TJ Laramie making his UFC debut.
Canada.
And then Tyson Nam rebooked against promotional newcomer Jerome Rivera. First fight of the night.
I didn't even know about that. Is this breaking news?
They announced it on the broadcast.
They announced on the broadcast. Okay, I didn't even see that.
We lost the fight on that card too. Didn't we lose the fight today?
We lost one late last night. Mickey Gall is out of his fight with an injury. So he's not fighting Miguel Baeza. It looks like, I mean, there's 14 fights on the card right now. So I would say it's probably unlikely they rebook Miguel or find another opponent. But I don't see a lot of 70 guys at 170 wanting to take that fight on short notice. But you never know. We've seen crazier things. Look at Kevin Kroom tonight coming out of nowhere on a day's notice. And putting away Roosevelt Roberts the way he did.
Chimaev would do it if, God forbid, something happened to the Meerschaert matchup. He would absolutely cut that 15 pounds and just take. He'd be like, "Yeah, I want to stay in the card. I'll cut 15 pounds to fight Baeza." And then that would suit my prediction of my Chimaev Baeza pick that I made like 2 months ago. Can you do a throttle kind of growl when you're pronouncing those names like it's really if you want to get it right, it's really Khamzat like Khabib.
Khamzat.
Yes.
Khamzat Chimaev.
Khamzat Chimaev.
I cannot wait for that fight.
This is a pay-per-view card. Wait. This is a card if this before the 12 pay-per-views a month era, where for some reason they dictated that every pay-per-view has to be headlined by a title fight, which I'll never understand. This is a pay-per-view level card from like 6 or 7 years or whenever before they started doing that. Woodley and Covington is just a grudge match people have been asking for forever. And then, as you mentioned, Cerrone and Price could be a fight of the year candidate. Khamzat Chimaev, everyone wants to see him fight. So there you go. He's like one of the hottest names right now. Johnny Walker, let's not forget, was like the hottest name around this time, like last year. Obviously, you know, a lot of shine came off of there because of some of the losses he suffered, but he's still a super exciting guy, especially when you throw him in there with someone like Ryan Spann. And Mackenzie Dern, again, also a name, very much a name in the MMA sphere that is so intriguing and that draws eyeballs. So yes, this is really a pay-per-view level card that you people are getting for your ESPN Plus subscription, and us people in Canada will be getting on TSN. So
yeah, and I'm not gonna say this is UFC pay-per-view level, but this is early UFC on Fox level.
So specific, but
sure. Early UFC on Fox. That there, you know what that means. That had a remember like UFC on Fox 1 through 8 or 9. They felt special. And then eventually they just became what UFC on Fuel cards, but whatever.
I was gonna say, it's certainly better than UFC on Fuel TV and definitely better than like UFC on FX. It's definitely
better. Oh, yeah. Those are bad too. Yeah. Those are pretty bad. And by the way, if there's any media members watching who are going to be on the virtual media day call and Mackenzie Dern's up there, do not ask her about her weight. You don't need to. Just look at her. She said she's 119 when I talked to her on Wednesday. 119. She'll be on weight probably by the time she gets off the plane. She's probably there now. All right. You don't need to ask her about the weight. You don't need to be concerned about it. She's going to make it. By the way, I know people have asked, can you get Colby on before he fights? I will tell you that I've tried. Colby is off. Colby goes through these spells. Very rarely when I text Colby Covington does he not respond to me. Right now he's kind of off the radar. He hasn't talked to anybody. I'm pretty sure that the last time I talked to him was the last interview he did. So if you want to get Colby's thoughts on the fight, go back into the archives and watch that, because I'm pretty sure that's the last interview he's done heading into the fight. Well, I think once he went pen to paper, and then once the Masvidal thing working with Woodley came out, he's off the radar. So I think the virtual media day will be like the next time you hear from him. So I've tried. Trust me on that.
Real quick, we don't got to predict a winner for Colby Woodley. But these you know, bad blood fights, they go one way or the other. It's going to kind of just be, you know, one of those fights, or it's going to be freaking awesome, like, you know, like Usman Covington. Where are we going? Awesome or just, yeah, it's a fight.
I don't know.
I'm the prince of positivity, you know that. And part of me wants to say this is going to be more like Usman Covington. But I was so discouraged by the Woodley Burns fight. I cannot lie. And Burns is a great talent. All the credit to him. But it just looks like Woodley cannot pull that trigger anymore. Just like also we saw with Robbie Lawler. You hit a wall at some point. And I think it doesn't matter who you're fighting. It doesn't matter how motivated you are. Something happens when you get in there. And you're just not able to execute like you used to. So I do kind of think that's where Tyron Woodley is in his career. And Covington's such a pressure fighter. I think he's really going to put it on him. I know that's not what people want to hear. And it's such a negative thing for me to say. So you know what? The good news is I'm usually wrong about these things. So I'll stick with my, for you people, I will stick with my prediction and say, I think we might get a somewhat discouraging fight. We might get a lopsided Covington win. But again, if I'm wrong, good for everyone else.
Interesting point Gerald Mearshard made in my conversation with him is that he was, when I did the interview with him, he was in St. Louis working with Tyron Woodley. He doesn't work with Tyron that often, but when he does, he's done it for two other fights where he's worked with him primarily and as like a full-on partner. One, Robbie Lawler. Two, Darren Till. So maybe you get a little something here. He says Woodley looks great. I mean, he's not going to say Woodley looks like shit because, I mean, they're teammates and they're working together. But I think, I mean, if there's one fight that's going to get Woodley back on track and at least like the Woodley that made a run at the belt and started finishing guys, like this is the fight. Like this is it. Like if we see that same guy again that we saw in the Usman fight and the Burns fight, like what else is there to do to like get him out of this funk? Like this is the fight. We'll see.
Yeah, again, no, I think you're absolutely right. This is, it's a cliche, do or die, make or break, whichever one you want to use. This is it. This is the one he's been asking for. Stylistically also, again, I think a lot of people, when Woodley was the champion, would have easily picked him to be coming. I think it would have at least been a 2-1 favorite in the odds. But things change so fast in MMA. And, you know, what we think and what is reality can change so quickly. So the reality of Tyron Woodley right now is he's I would say just barely hang on to a top five spot, and a loss to Covington really sends him plummeting down. I don't know if it necessarily sends him to retirement. I don't know if we want to go that far, but it would have people. I think it would a loss to Covington would have people asking that question for him. Sadly,
man. Yeah, the man is 38 years old.
Yep,
he's done a lot.
Colby's training at MMA Masters for this camp as well. Nico Price. And that team over there. So we'll see. I mean, this is his first camp, like not at ATT, not without Dan Lambert by his side. And there's a lot of interesting factors, but Colby is a super smart fighter. Whether you think he's had exciting fights or, you know, he's a boring fighter or whatever, people think that he's very intelligent. He's got great game plans and they usually seem to pay off. We'll see what happens. The Usman one did not, but that was just an awesome fight. So I'm looking forward to that entire card next week. I cannot wait. And we're going to be talking all about it on Between the Links and What the Heck and all the craziness. So do we have any other questions, Casey, or should we say goodbye here?
I think we're ready to say goodnight.
Yes.
Let's shout out. I don't know if just any names we missed. Liz Carmouche, successful UFC Bellator debut, won by submission. Keone Diggs, which I think is a pretty big upset because he's undefeated, sure, but Derek Campos is a Bellator original, a veteran, I actually did not have the chance to see the fight. Does anyone know? Was this a come from behind? Did he need this submission? He finished with 1 second remaining in the fight. He choked out Derek Campos. I don't know. Sorry, I was not watching.
That fight was another important fight, so I had to skip that one. I didn't. That was like one of the few fights I did not watch.
Yeah, I apologize to readers, but regardless of the circumstances, choking out a veteran like Derek Campos with 1 second remaining in a fight, that is, again, something that I think we'll review and I think we'll actually be talking about for a while. Because Diggs, again, had a little bit of hype behind him, but I certainly picked Campos to beat him and just assumed that I would see Campos by knockout or Campos by decision on the results sheet. I did not expect to see Keone Diggs by technical submission at 4:59. Of round three. So good for him. He definitely deserves a shout out.
And big shout out to Bobby Green as well. Another win for him.
Awesome.
Way to use his time on the mic as well. Basically walked out on Michael Bisping, took a stand, thought that was great. Jalen Turner, great win tonight over Brock Weaver. That was a great fight. And then Bam Bam is back. Brian Barberina beat Anthony Ivey after over a year away and back surgeries and all sorts of craziness. But Bam Bam's just always an exciting fight. So we had some good suggestions, which we will probably discuss on to the next one on Monday. So that's it. I think we'll put a bow on this thing. We've been doing this for a little while. So for AK, for EKC Leiden, I am Mike Heck. Hope you guys enjoyed the fights tonight and on Friday night. And we'll see you with all the coverage right here on MMAfighting.com. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.